Let's talk, however, about the event that set in motion so many of the factors that have afflicted America's economy, and indeed factors that we're still trying to get a grip on today. Back, way back in the mists of time, in September 2008, you might remember, with mounting losses on high-risk mortgages and mortgage securities, the Federal Home Loan Mortgage Corporation was almost on the brink of insolvency, and everyone was terrified the housing market would totally collapse if Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae failed. So the U.S. government, under President Bush, with the support of both Democratic candidate Obama and Republican candidate McCain, made the difficult choice to place both of those firms into conservatorship, essentially taking control away from the shareholders. Now, the taxpayers paid hundreds of billions, and it was meant to stabilize the housing finance system, but Freddie Mac's fall at the start of the financial crisis set off shockwaves around the world. And now comes the very first book telling that story from the inside. As a former vice president of public policy at Freddie Mac, our next guest, Susan Wharton Gates, who spent 19 years at the company, is probably the best person to explain the corporation's contribution to the mortgage lending crisis that nearly collapsed the economy. She provides a vivid eyewitness account of all the economic and political forces that led to massive losses for shareholders, investors, homeowners, and of course, you, the taxpayer. And it's something that we're still dealing with, and she makes a very compelling case that it's going to teeter on the brink yet again. What a pleasure to welcome Susan Wharton Gates to SiriusXM Insight.
Hey, thank you. Great to be on the show.
It's great to have you, and thank you for writing the book, and congratulations on all the terrific reviews you've been getting. Was it important to you that you get your perspective on everything that went down into print and made that part of the official story?
Yes, I have to say it was very important to me, and it's very important to be talking about it today to a wide listenership. So I was at Freddie 19 years from 1990 until about 6 months after the government takeover in September 2008. And I was not there as a finance whiz or as a trader. I was there as a writer primarily, and in my role as this vice president of public policy. Sounds very impressive. There's 250 other officers in the company ahead of me, the ones who do math in their heads, you know, they get paid a lot. I do words. So I was a writer, and I was over, a 10-year period would be tasked to write the testimony, the public testimony to members of Congress when our CEOs would be called up to testify. So for years I had been studying Freddie Mac's history, understanding the tensions in the firm, understanding the economics, the finance, and the public policy, the social policy expectations, and in a large sense, the politics follow along those lines. So writing these public statements sort of trained me to tell that story and to take very complex things and to make them understandable and palatable to a broader audience, which is what I hope I've done in this book. And I know this stuff is so hard to get through at times, but it's so important to, for the public to understand that, one, they own these companies now. These are public assets that are supported by the United States government. If anything happens to them, there's no shareholder now that's except the taxpayer and the government that's going to pitch in and help them. And as public assets, we as the people need to understand, what are we going to do about them? And they're sort of like really important cars that we were driving, and they had this bad wreck, and we sort of bandaged them up and put them back out on the road. But they really need to be reformed, and it's been 9 years, and it's the one missing piece of reform from the whole financial crisis that's still outstanding.
Now, of course, millions of Americans don't really understand the full role of Freddie Mac and its history and its function. I mean, at best, some Americans have seen The Big Short. Do you think is some of the greatest misconceptions about Freddie Mac?
Well, I know when I was, before I even knew what they were, I thought Fannie Mae was a candy company. I think that the the F in front of both Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, and they come from these gobbledygook names, Federal Home Loan Mortgage Corporation, Federal National Mortgage Corporation, is Fannie Mae. And it sounds so boring and staid and federal, right? But in fact, they were, in the course of their history, which I go through in the book, they were set up to be and changed into quasi-governmental, quasi-private sector corporations. So they had shareholders, they had boards of directors, they had profit motive. They were accountable, you know, to shareholders, and they wanted to make a lot of money, and they wanted to see their stock rise. At the same time, they had been chartered by Congress. So Congress was their godparent and liked to oversee what we did. And if we made too much money, that began to rankle a lot of congressional members of Congress. And so a lot of social responsibilities were placed on the firm, both firms. But yeah, so it was complicated, as the movie goes.
Yeah, and it's almost deliberately complicated. I mean, I always explained it sort of saying if a ball player bets on his own team to fail, he's banned, and if a bank bets on their own mortgages to fail, they're bailed out, which is the most grotesque way of simplifying something so complicated, almost deliberately complicated to make it hard to understand, which is sort of what The Big Short script was all about. But that's why I think your book is so important, Susan Wharton Gates, because this is a firsthand account that goes into housing policies, really complex financial transactions that I think are designed to make them impossible to understand by lay people. And of course, this crazy patchwork of federal and state personnel involved in what became the Great Recession. And you managed to make this not just understandable to mooks like me, but also really compelling. And it's a terrific act of storytelling. Why did you decide to call it Days of Slaughter? How did you come up with that title?
Actually,
I'm very impressed by it.
So it's an ugly title. I agree. I won't claim ownership. My agent, actually, when he decided to take on the book as a project, he goes, "I don't like your title. I don't even remember what the old title was. I'll find it," he said. I said, "How do you find titles?" He goes, "I always find titles. I just read your book." And sure enough, at the very late in the book, I have this throwaway line. I'm making a presentation, I guess, to the board of directors. Things are, getting really scary in the markets. It's late 2007, and everyone is really turning to Freddie and Fannie. As much as they hated us and rued our existence, now the thought is, are we going to be the saviors of the market? And all those years of being irrelevant, being overtaken by Wall Street, and seeing our market share plummet had led to the place where it's like, oh my gosh, they like us now, and they like us again, and we are relevant, and what are we going to do, and what is the right thing to do, which is the question I ask again and again in the book. You know, how do we play this dual mission, our responsibility to the government, to the public, to our homeowners, and our responsibility as a shareholder-owned company? What should we do? And I made a comment of, well, we shouldn't profit ourselves in the day of slaughter, which is some sort of backwards translation of some Old Testament prophet who was saying, you know, be careful in these difficult days what we choose to do. And anyway, that was what the agent thought would be a good title. I sort of choked when he told me that would be the title, but you know, it really is appropriate because
it's very appropriate.
20 million foreclosures, so many people lost their homes. The GAO said it was equivalent to a loss of a whole year in GDP in terms of the hit to our economy. Spillover effects, the disproportionate, horrific impact on low-income and minority communities. I mean, they bore the brunt of it, and they still are bearing that. It spreads out to localities, local governments. Small towns went bankrupt because they were relying on property revenue, which had just plummeted. Federal government, Federal Reserve is now 40% of the balance sheet of the United States government, is Freddie and Fannie securities. And it goes overseas as well. I mean, central banks had bought up all our stuff as well. So it was a day of slaughter for many, many people.
And a very preventable one as well. I mean, you know, as you point out in the book, and as history remembers, the president at the time, George W. Bush, made quite an impact on saying that this was an ownership society, and there was a tremendous pressure on Americans from the top down to begin buying houses. And that was why so many banks began giving out mortgages left and right, often to people that couldn't afford the mortgages. What made this special was the banks really knew these people couldn't afford the mortgages, and they were kind of counting on that.
Well, yeah, it's complicated.
Am I simplifying it too much? You do a really good job.
Maybe a little.
Okay,
but
please.
There's some really important points in what you just said. Is that the tech boom had happened before Bush had come in? Remember, we had 9/11.
Of course.
That was horrific. I mean, that was a real downer for the economy. And of course, I'm not trying to be tongue in cheek there, but it did lead to some stimulative policies of very low interest rates. And I think that The Bush administration was very pro-ownership, and as you can read in the book, we talked them into being pro-homeownership as
well. Of course.
Because conservatives generally really don't like Freddie and Fannie. And so getting some conservatives, particularly ones that live in a big white house on Pennsylvania Avenue, to say nice things about us was just very important. But way back in 2002, in his State of the Union address, there was no inkling that we would soon be giving away mortgages that people couldn't afford. I mean, it really was kind of innocent by current standards.
Absolutely. It was all designed
to be innocent in Washington, but I meant that there was not this view that we would be lowering the underwriting standards to do that. There was enough unfairness in the system. There was enough discrimination in the system. There was enough stuff that needed to be worked through even before we got to changing underwriting standards. But in any event, to me, it was like the checkered flag. And the banks, the lenders, the realtors, what I call the housing lobby, the cheerleaders for the whole system were like, go! And, you know, everybody just put, you know, pedal to the metal, and out we went trying to make loans. And see what happens, what the old saying is that, you know, rising house prices, which is sort of where we're in right now,
mm-hmm.
leads to kind of covers the sins of the underwriters. And the reason, back to what you'd said, that maybe lenders weren't so worried about the borrowers they were putting in the homes. With a rising house price environment, if a borrower can't make the mortgages, if there is the need or horrific event where there's a foreclosure situation, in many cases, if house prices have risen quite a bit since origination of the mortgage, the lender and or the guarantor, like Freddie Mac or
right.
Fannie Mae, would be able to recoup the losses. And so people were given loans that, and especially if a bank goes, I'm just going to send that to Freddie and I'm done. They never check, and I'm just going to send those off to Freddie. That's their problem. Then you've got people getting into mortgages that they cannot stay with if times go bad, or if the interest rate rises, if they have an adjustable mortgage. Anyway, all that sort of falls in the lap of the place of last resort, which was Freddie and Fannie, and of course now it is the taxpayer and the government. So people did get loans. I take homeowners to task a little bit in
mm-hmm.
this book. I think that's like something we're not allowed to talk about. But it is true that people were also pretty ambitious in what they chose to do many times. And yet there were also people who were hoodwinked and didn't understand, and they were involved in this predatory lending that was taking place in the subprime market. And that's just truly tragic about what happened.
Well, that's why I think your book is so important, because it is the first to come from an inside point of view as to what was going on within Freddie Mac. And you're exactly right. The whole impetus to create this housing boom was to do something that was both a serious stimulus to the economy while also putting people in homes and improving quality of life. And one of the most stark parts of your book is when you go into this what you call the serious fault line in mm. Freddie Mac, in terms of the how Freddie Mac had this dual mission. They had to ensure mortgage market stability while also broadening home ownership. And as complicated as that sounds, it's even more complicated in practice.
Yes, it is. I teach business ethics. Business ethics now for Virginia Tech. And one of the key things is, do you understand your mission? And when employees have different, you know, aspects of a mission, and without a strong leader that's trying to triangulate all those pieces, it's very quick that things can run amok. And so our traders, they just saw it was all about liquidity and making money, and, you know, we'll just pump it out. The affordable housing people at our company were just like, oh, we just have to make the price lower for homeowners and, you know, get everybody into a home, and that's the way that we serve our mission. And then our risk people, you know, they're like, oh, my goodness, I can't sleep at night. You know, the risks are starting to pile up. And
mm-hmm.
when we knew a lot about, we were blamed most of the time for being way too stodgy, way too conservative. But, you know, that wasn't cool after, you know, we had our accounting scandals, political scandals. We needed our new leaders thought to get with the program and become part of this pro-homeownership hit parade and expand the envelope, as they say. And so, you know, risk, liquidity, affordability, that's pretty tough to ask a company to try and do all those three things while serving shareholders as well as Congress.
Our guest is Susan Wharton Yates. She's the founder of the Wharton Policy Group, LLC, teaches at Virginia Tech's Center for Public Administration and Policy and the Paplin School of Business. And we are having her here to discuss her essential new book, Days of Slaughter, Inside the Fall of Freddie Mac and Why It Could Happen Again. We welcome your calls at 877-974-7487 here at Insight. That's 877-9-SIRIUS. And throughout the book, you argue that our policymakers aren't going to be able to reform the housing finance system right now that the taxpayers are footing without getting into deeper issues like ideology and the moral hazards, as well as interest group politics. How could any society begin to unravel this mess and have a cleaner, more efficient system?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I think, you know, the old line, follow the money. And the housing market is just soaked with huge subsidies that keep the politics going, that keep, you know, the interest groups arguing and working and sending lobbyists in to argue for this or that. The mortgage interest tax deduction, for example, which is being brought up now as a possible you know, item on the chopping block. It's very costly to the nation, and many studies, including one from the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, have shown, you Americans, you spend a ton on housing and home ownership with your subsidies through your tax code. And I should say, goodness, taxes are due tomorrow, and everybody's happy that they're going to take that deduction, anybody who has a mortgage. But still, it's not buying for our nation what it needs to buy, and we're spending a lot of money on home ownership. And whenever you have a lot of money in Washington, you're going to have a lot of lobbyists, a lot of interest groups, and you have a lot of gridlock. So I think dealing with our broader issues, not just trying to say, oh, what to do with Freddie and Fannie, we'll just tinker here or there, but I do think a bigger conversation is needed about our subsidies and the way we view home ownership, how much debt we want to take on and ask young people to take on, or encourage low-wealth people to take on. I mean, that's a recipe for disaster, and we already baked that cake, and I just don't think we should do that again.
One thing that I wanted to ask you about is this: the government-sponsored enterprises, the Federal National Mortgage Association, FNMA or Fannie Mae, as well as the Federal Home Loan Mortgage Corporation or Freddie Mac, which, as you point out, are owned by the taxpayers, are still guaranteeing the mortgages that could end with the U.S. holding the tab all over again in case these defaults happen once more. And I kind of feel like, in a way, we've learned nothing, because we went through this entire bailout process. We essentially nationalized these two companies, and now it doesn't seem that there's been any sort of real reform put in place. I don't want to get too deep into the politics of Dodd-Frank and what have you, but it does seem almost inevitable, almost cyclical, that this is going to happen again.
Well, let's hope not, but it's part of the reason I wanted to shake things up a bit with the book. But I will say this, is that Dodd-Frank did reform the part of the mortgage market that where lenders deal with borrowers. It has nothing to do with Freddie and Fannie, but nevertheless, right, there was this one piece of reform, and they tried to strike out and get rid of the most egregious products that were out there. And so some people are arguing, including some in the new administration, that that's too tight, you know, and that really hampered our economic growth and has hurt people. And so the trend will be to liberalize that. So most of the mortgages, though, that Freddie and Fannie have bought in the last 5 to 8 years are pretty high quality. They're not the same really high-risk stuff that led to the crisis. So their current measure of book on their, what they call the mortgage book, has a pretty high level of quality. So I don't think anything is imminent, and I should say to anybody listening to this who works with Freddie Mac, this book has nothing to do with the current company, management, the CEOs,
absolutely,
employees, or the regulator. This is all about, the reason it can happen again is because it's an old jalopy running down the street and has not been fixed. And so you've got two tarnished companies that are hugely important, that are undermining, underpinning a $5 trillion mortgage market that relies completely on government support. And by the nature of the government's bailout agreements, their capital position, this cushion that cushions their balance sheets against flows and, interest rate changes or other bumps and wrinkles that happen on a quarterly basis, that is really dwindling down to nothing. And so The regulator a year ago put on a hair on fire speech, kind of urging Congress to say, look, you know, yes, the book of business is good. Yes, Freddie Mac made a lot of money in the last quarter, and it's easy to say we shouldn't worry about this. But these anything could go wrong in global markets, anything unexpected. You know, we really don't want to play with that kind of fire. So I don't think it would be the same sort of crisis, although, as I say, the ingredients for subprime mortgage bombs are still out there. And, you know, low interest rates, the homeownership rate is at its lowest level since 1965. So that means there's going to be pressure to expand homeownership.
Right.
When you have a tight credit envelope and, you know, you're really picky on the mortgages you buy, that creates pressure for people who can't get in. And then house prices are really rising. And so how are young families going to come in and afford if you don't, like, lower the down payment requirements again or create other products that are sort of funky that, you know, we think we can manage, but maybe we can't.
How have your colleagues and your former colleagues reacted to you writing this book?
Well, it's funny. And one of my, I have a student who's a Freddie Mac employee, and I knew she would find out about this. I mean, there was a sort of a look of horror on her face, but I have to say that it's been a very painful process to write about a company that I loved and still love. I mean, I hate to see it. It's a public asset. I would like us to do something with it and learn from it and strengthen it and fix it. That said, my what we call the old Freddie colleagues, you know, those of us who've been there 30 years or more, to a person have found this deeply compelling and very true. And I think almost cathartic, because after the company was taken over in 2008, I mean, I didn't have a job anymore. I was a writer, and the company couldn't say anything and really hasn't said anything publicly for 8 or 9 years. And that's a pretty hard time. Many journalists, many policymakers, members of Congress, they yell about the companies, they argue about the companies, they put forward ideas about the companies, and the companies themselves, the people who went through it, can't say anything. So I honestly felt I had a public obligation to say it. I'm sure some aren't welcoming the book, but I have to say it means a lot to me that people I've worked with actually are saying right on.
And I think if there are people out there who would rather you hadn't written it, it proves that you really did have the public obligation to write the book. Tracy in Utah is calling. Welcome, Tracy. You're on Sirius XM Insight with Susan Wharton Gates, author of Day of Slaughter, Inside the Fall of Freddie Mac and Why It Could Happen Again.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm actually a real estate broker in Utah, and I had just a couple questions, if you don't mind me asking. You know, thinking back to the crash of 2008, at the very beginning, the government was debating whether to give every homeowner $500,000 to pay off their home mortgage or to bail out the banks. And there was a good argument to say, you know, instead of just bailing out the banks and not having any regulations, not having any terms tied to that money, it was free money to do whatever they wanted with, maybe we should give $500,000 to every homeowner in the country, and that would take care of the problem. Plus, it would keep those homeowners in their homes. Instead, what happened was a lot of these homeowners wanted to refinance. They were begging their banks to refinance, to help them out, not to, you know, change the principal, but just to change the interest rate, give them a better mortgage than what they had so that they could have smaller payments and try to recoup. And the banks threw them out. They said, no, you're done. We're throwing you out of your home. And what eventually happened was the banks got less money from a new buyer than what they would have gotten from that homeowner that was in the house. Not to mention, they threw out families out of homes. But, you know,
well,
I'm wondering why that was a good move for the banks. Why did they want to throw people out of their homes instead of refinancing with those people to keep these families stable?
That is the big question, I think, that millions had back in 2008, Susan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Great question, Tracy. Thank you.
Thank you, Tracy. Thank you.
I remember a situation. My optometrist, a woman from an immigrant, and her house was underwater. She knew I worked at Freddie Mac. She found out her loan was owned by Freddie Mac and implored me, just change my mortgage. And why can't you just fix it? And don't you have the money to do that?
Wow.
And it was a very painful moment, and everything's been painful to watch how this has played out for homeowners, particularly in communities. And I had to say, you know what? Your loan was put in a security and cut up into probably 45 pieces, and then it mingled with other parts and pieces, like I talk about chicken parts, in securities, and then purchased parts of your mortgage, like the principal part or the interest-only part, were purchased by investors in our country and all over the world. Reconstructing that and just giving you the money back is complicated and very difficult and legally very challenging. The fact that the government chose to do this bailout of banks rather than to bail out homeowners obviously is very controversial and still very painful to even think about today. But I think that they really were seeing this idea of something being too big to fail, meaning that if Freddie and Fannie came down with their securities owned in investors' accounts all over the world, not just to mention the United States, it was like a massive tree falling in a storm, hitting all the grid.
Right.
And that grid was going to go down. And literally, I think stepping in to try and save the grid is what the government did. Now, to pick up the pieces for homeowners, that job was given to the Department of Treasury, which set up two major programs. And as a realtor, you're probably familiar with HAMP and HARP.
Mm-hmm.
And those have been laboring. It is a very difficult process, but trying to identify borrowers who, you know, whether they have enough equity or they're underwater, but they need adjustments and helping them get back on their feet. It helped a lot, hundreds of thousands of people, but not the millions that it probably could have helped. So it did not solve the problem, but it did save the grid. And I think that was the terrible trade-off our policymakers faced.
Well, that's why, again, we're grateful you wrote this book to give an account of a cautionary account of these failed policies, the mismanagements, and all the issues of political ideology and organization and ethics that all combined for the perfect storm that led to the housing meltdown. Days of Slaughter, Inside the Fall of Freddie Mac and Why It Could Happen Again. Susan Wharton Yates, thank you so very much for joining us today on SiriusXM Insight. You actually make this stuff understandable.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.